G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Adam White, good morning to you.
Yes, good morning, Daniel. It was a little bit choppy, the waters in the first 15 minutes yesterday. Really wasn't sure what's going on. It's all a bit of a blur, but we got there in the end. So, yes, good to have you back. And hopefully the medicinal things that you've taken over the past half hour will get you through. It is supposed to be the bye round or the bye weekend in AFL football between the home and away season and the final series this weekend.
Oh, right.
And it is also going to be the first Group 1 of the season at Caulfield tomorrow with the Memsey Stakes. It's usually... it's one of the great weekends. I usually go to the races, sort of, you know, in that gap between the footy. And sort of it's that real official kickstart of the Spring Carnival. Well, not the official, it's the unofficial kickstart of the Spring Carnival before it sort of gets going again in a proper way the month after. But, yeah, life's different, isn't it?
See, I don't even think about that stuff anymore.
At the moment.
All that stuff that should be happening or could have happened. I just don't even think about it. I just keep moving forward because that's all I've got at the moment. Just one step in front of the other. We've talked about that a bit in the last couple of months, but I don't even think about what could have or should have or might have been, because I think it just gets you frustrated, I must admit. So
Yeah, fair enough.
But the Memsey's going to be a great race, and we'll have a chat to Dino and Quinny about it after 7 o'clock, obviously. But you're right, it's always a good race day, Memsey Stakes Day. But not to be for the punters tomorrow anyway. We get to see it on the box, which is great, and you'll hear it certainly on RSN 927, all the action from Caulfield, but a different way of experiencing that this year perhaps for a lot of people on Memsey Stakes Day. Now, you're all very good yesterday. What I thought might have happened was that Adam Romanaskis might have jumped in and just rode shotgun with you, but he decided to leave you hanging.
Well, especially considering he's got a radio studio in his house. You wouldn't have thought that would have been too much of an issue for him.
That's right. Wouldn't have thought it was a massive issue. But he said, up your jumper. You can do it yourself. Let's see if you can swim. Adam Romanaskis, Bombers champion, these days manager to the Stars. Good morning, Rama.
Very good morning. Sometimes you're in a deep sleep. And I was just in a deep sleep yesterday. I was warm. I was cozy. My phone was on silent. And I simply just didn't wake up. I woke up at about 7:30 and things were too late. Whitey had sort of avoided the icebergs in the Titanic, and he made his way through, and the show was fine. So he didn't need me, but I apologise. I do apologise to Whitey and Joey, but sleep's just simply more important sometimes.
No, look, no one here would deny you that. Some more sleep if you get a chance to do that, Rama. So that's okay. That is A-okay. My question to Whitey is, how did you go with the clock? Because you're not really a clock man, running to the clock of the program. How did you go with that yesterday? Did you have a little secondary clock?
I really battled. Didn't have a clock. didn't have the audio accessibility until Craig texted it through to me. Oh, it was a disaster. A dog's breakfast. But I apologise. I mean, Andrew May is fantastic for him to stay around and help us get through. I knew I was always fine once we got Chris Rogers on. There's never a problem, but I just had to get to that point. Anyway, yes. We got there. You know what I did do? In the first 15 minutes of the program, wrote a quiz. I wrote one.
Oh, no. I knew you would have.
Oh, no.
And we were going to do it. We were going to do it. And Adam Collins picked up his phone and we had a chat to him about the English cricket situation, so I didn't have to go with it.
I was a bit
flat because we were ready to go. And they were ready. The listeners were ready for the quiz. They were lining up. We had a full board of calls and we didn't even call for them. Big Dog rang us yesterday because his horse was running.
Oh, how'd it go?
Our feeders then. Well, it didn't run particularly well. Now, you know why I know that? Because my mum heard Big Dog and the confidence that was coming through the phone, and my mum backed our Vita Zen in the first race at Mornington. Now, my mum's not really a punter. My mum's not really a punter, but she still backed it anyway because Big Dog told her to.
I'm concerned about your mother if she's taking funding advice from the dog. It is an unusual system she's running.
What I'm concerned about...
My mum always runs an unusual system. Don't worry about that.
What I'm concerned about is that when he takes the reins, Whitey, he just thinks he can start a quiz again. I'm not sure how that works.
Well, when you're sitting there like a duck with all that action going on underneath the water and the calm exterior on top, Rammer, sometimes you just got to make sure you've got something up your sleeve. And the quiz is always a safeguard for our man. He loves a question and he loves an answer.
That's correct.
Did you speak to Jess Hull? I haven't heard. I was looking forward to that for 2 weeks.
Did we, Joey? We spoke to Jess. No, she was fantastic. She was absolutely fantastic. And the interesting part of her story, I found, was that she's currently in Sweden.
Yeah.
And she was talking about how unnerving it is walking around the city or just being in the country. And it's almost like coronavirus isn't there, even though it is there. Like, you know, not wearing masks, really, and just going about your business like it's normal when really it's not normal. She found that quite unnerving. So I thought that was really quite interesting. And particularly the fact that she's now running personal best times when really it should be in Olympics. You know, I think there's sort of good and bad about that, because the bad is that, you know, she's peaking at the right time. The good is, well, if she's doing that now, is she going to be better again in 12 months' time? So, no, it was a good chat.
Nice. Busy. I've just had the rundown sent to me. Just Hull, Adam Collins here, early Mar, Brett Johnson, Craig Lowndes, Ryan Myers, Carla Daniel, Chris Rogers. Boy, oh boy, that was a jam-packed edition.
Yep. Well, Joey does a very good job.
You were fine. Hey, Rammer, the Bombers weren't fine for half last night in that game against Hawthorn in the Hufford Ramanaskas Cup. Adelaide Oval, the time-honoured starting time of 4:40. And then all of a sudden, Andrew McGrath said, "Hang on, fellas, I'll take you with me. Just jump on board in that third quarter." That was a remarkable game of footy in many respects last night at the Adelaide Oval.
Essendon, the way they played in the first half, but Hawthorn, the way they played in that first half, I think we need to give credit to as well, though. They were terrific in the first half, the way they moved the ball. Clearly, Essendon were over-handballing. Hawthorn were able to apply pressure and force turnover, and they were able to capitalise on the scoreboard. So credit where credit's due there to the Hawks. Obviously, the story of the game is about Essendon and their second half and the way they actually came out and started moving the ball. We've been talking about this for a number of weeks, Whitey and I, about the frustration in their, you know, just rolling back in defence and playing a waiting game, waiting the ball to come to them. But that third quarter, when they started moving the ball with some flair, with some unpredictability, with some speed, you know, they're able to score quite easily. They've kicked 11 goals in the second half. Joe Danaher looked like he hasn't missed a beat in that second half, the way the ball was getting delivered to him. Their forwards were very active, obviously, because just of the weighted numbers simply coming inside forward 50. So, yeah, it was a huge turnaround. But if I could show you some of the text message I received in the first half of that game from friends, from old teammates, from Hawthorn people, all sorts of things, because it's a really strong rivalry that obviously dates back to the 80s there with Essendon and Hawthorn. So the game does have a fair bit of feeling and meaning, and I think there was, at the final siren, a lot of Essendon supporters were obviously quite happy.
Yes, I gathered that feedback I sort of got through the evening as well, that there were some Essendon supporters pretty happy. And you mentioned Big Joe, he was certainly one of the stories. I mean, I think the third quarter of Andrew McGrath was one of the great quarters I've seen from a player of recent times.
Boy,
goodness, did he just will himself to be that player for the Bombers in that moment. I thought he was just magnificent. But your man Joe was remarkable, really. He did some great things. Once he took that big hanger in the third term, I thought, hang on a second, there might be something coming here. So we've got some of Joe's action. Someone talking about Joe from last night after the game. John Worsfold was talking about Joe, the coach, or one of the coaches of the Bombers, talking about Joe after the game.
He's talented. He's been committed to getting himself back to this point. So, he's had setbacks. It's been frustrating. He's obviously no question he would have had doubts at some points about what's going wrong here? Why can't I get this going? But all the way through, he's been open to working with a team to get him back playing. So, as I said, it's everyone's put a lot of time and energy into assisting Joey be able to do what he loves doing.
That was John Wasfod on Joe Danaher last night. Whitey, you would have been impressed with that second half of the Bombers?
I was, but I was also very frustrated with that second half because that's the way they should play. And I want to know why they played that way. Did they play that way because that's the way Ben Rutten and Blake Carousella and John Worsfold want them to play? Or was that the way they were forced to play because they were six goals down and they had to take the game on to try and find a way to get back into the game? I think that they want them more to play most of the way they played in the first half. They clearly overhandballed to a point. But that fast football, we haven't seen from Essendon often this year. So to me, I think it is an outlier that they played at that speed. But that's the strength that Essendon, this is what I keep saying, and Rama says the same thing. That's the thing about Essendon, their strength is their speed. Their speed of ball movement, their unpredictability. Now, yes, it helps when Joe Danaher and Jake Stringer are inside 50 and to a point Cale Hooker. But that's their strength, and they don't play to their strength enough. So I was incredibly disappointed in the first half, and more than anything else was just their lack of intensity to allow Hawthorne to walk down the field, but also just their dumbness whenever they had the football, just kicking it to Hawthorne players, and their slow ball movement. But second half, now, and this is the whole thing, did they? It's like the Giants in that last quarter against West Coast. Is that the way they're meant to play, or is it that's the way they play because they've got no other alternative but to get back into the game by taking the game on and being fast?
What do you
reckon,
Emma?
I don't know the answer to it.
I probably think it was the latter. They had to play that way to get back. They had to take risks. It was either we take risks and we get back in the game, or we take risks and we lose by 10 goals if they continue to perform the way they perform in that second half. But the interesting part for me was around the contest yesterday. Clearances with 19 to 40 in Essendon's favour. And that was really evident in the second half. That the way they were able to move the ball from stoppage to forward line, they were coming out the... And Jimmy and I talk about this a lot. They were coming out the front of the stoppage. And when you're able to come out the front of a stoppage, they had 20 centre clearances. 20 centre clearances to 6 in the end.
It was remarkable. What was it at half time? I did these numbers. It was 9-2 at half time and 11-4 in the second half. It was a clinic.
Yeah.
It was so frustrating to watch with an eye on the other team, perhaps. That was so frustrating.
They finally used their speed. And Whitey and I have spoken about this a lot, but the problem is Essendon have spoken about getting a bigger midfielder now for a long time. And they're probably trying to still get that bigger type midfielder, because when the likes of Scheel, Merritt, McGrath, who we've mentioned, who are sensational, Parrish, they're not inside mids, those guys. They're more your hybrid type of mids. They're probably the guys that you want to get on the outside as your first receivers. So when Merritt and those guys that I mentioned got the ball and got it into some sort of space in that second half, they're able to hit a target. Rather in the past where they've got the ball so close and tight in a clearance and they've just had to jam it on the boot and kick it forward, and it's really easy for a defender to kill that ball. Now, okay, yep, Joe was there and he was able to cause a contest inside forward 50. He ends up having six shots at goal. But I thought the difference was the way they were taking the ball away from contest with some sort of space. They were actually able to then direct the ball where it wanted to go to.
It was all back through the middle too. That's what captured my attention. It was all back through the middle, from the wings to the middle.
Which is not what they normally do. That's not what they normally do.
I think, and then it's actually nice to watch Essendon play and then Richmond play straight after. Because clearly with the Carousella-Rutten connection with Richmond, you started to... Because I was asking myself that question, why do they play like that in the second half? Then I watched a Richmond game and I thought, this fully makes sense now. The vision of this makes sense. It matches up. They're trying to get so much more of that into Essendon's game. They overdid it in the first half, Rammer, as you're right, with their handball. But that's the sort of games seemingly they want to impact onto this playing group, Carousel and Rutten, and they're just not ready for it yet. They don't quite understand it yet, and they get caught between systems sometimes in sixes and sevens, and they just get absolutely reamed on the rebound. So actually, seeing those games back-to-back last night was really good for me to watch what perhaps they're trying to do, and they haven't had the time to implement it properly. Yeah. And but seeing Richmond do it later on was magnificent, just by the way. We'll get to that. But that second half, clearly, Rammer was went out of the box. I mean, Hooker goes forward as that's a swingman option, which they haven't really utilised any stage through this season so far. And then things change with the way they move the ball. I don't think that's what they want to do. That would be the frustrating part for me as a Bombers fan.
Yeah. I think Whitey, over the past probably month or so, Essendon have had more of a tendency to fold back in defence and sit back. Yeah. And I don't know if that's been a directive of the coaching staff, or that's been a directive of I think James Kelly's their defensive coach, just for coverage. Because we've spoken about, about the limitations that the team have had with personnel. So maybe that was, okay, do we limit the damage and try to stay in a game long as we can, you know, NBA style, and let's go, you know, the last 3 or 4 minutes of the game, try and win it. But in the second half, when they were pushing, when they pushed their defenders higher up the ground, you saw Saad start to get into the game. You saw Ridley start to get the ball in better areas, not just in defensive 50 where he's under a lot of pressure. He's able to use his legs to get away from contest. So I just thought, rather than Essendon sitting back, instead Essendon pushed up the ground. They're in a more attacking position to start. Their mentality is more attacking to start with, rather than that defensive mindset of we've got to fold back, we've just got to sit back, we've got to weather the storm.
Yeah, and there's quite a few frustrated text messages and a few angled at me saying, "Oh, why aren't you enjoying the fact that Essendon won? You know, concentrate on the positive, not the negative." It doesn't matter whether it's Essendon to me or the Giants. The teams that have the players to play a positive, aggressive, attacking brand of football and don't frustrates me, because what we saw in the second half from Essendon, albeit against Hawthorn, who have been, you know, a perplexing team all year, just proves that that's when they're at their best. Now, you put McKenna back on a half-back flank and they make, they're made even more dangerous. Clearly, having the likes of Danaher and Stringer back in the team help from a personnel perspective. Hooker, you know, the ability to go from one end of the ground to the other, albeit, you know, clearly he was short of match practice. Personnel is still Essendon's major problem, but I still think game style is an issue. You play, you have a game style based on who you've got. I think that's the most. You don't have a game plan based on what you want it to be. You have a game plan based on what your players are, don't you?
That's a very interesting. That's the ultimate coach conversation, because I think Richmond have had a style that they want to play, and then they've recruited players that play that style, but they've done that over a period of time.
That's
so
right.
I think you can do it both ways. It's just a matter of, if you're coming in and you're trying to implement a style and you haven't got the players to suit that brand, then you are in trouble. There is years of pain for that.
So we're focused on Essendon half.
Yep.
17 scoring shots to 6 at halftime in Hawthorn's favour. Was it simply Essendon were just simply too good in the second half, or what changed with Hawthorn?
Yeah, well, they couldn't get their hands on the footy, which makes a big difference. And there's so many centre bounce clearances, gives you the territory battle, and they just couldn't get it out. I think they got really safe and nervous with their ball movement in the second half. Tried a few things, didn't come off, and then went back into their shells. They succumbed to the pressure. Once Essendon lifted their pressure rating, the ball use of Hawthorn was horrible in that second half. Decision-making and ball use was horrible. And then they just kept turning the ball over and just getting caught on the counter, like the Bombers had been done in the first half to them. Oh, and they got a bit tired, I think, too. They got a lot of players haven't played a lot of senior footy consistently. They're just not good enough at the moment, the Hawks. They had a really good moment where they rode the adrenaline wave for half a footy. But then once it got to the point where it was an arm wrestle again and they lost momentum, they collapsed a bit. I must admit, it was a very disappointing watch from a Hawthorn lens from the boys in the brown and gold last night.
All right, I'm going to say something that you're not going to agree with, but I'm very strong on this, and I'm going to cop a lot of hate for this, but I'm going to say it, and I strongly believe it.
Rama, it's a big build-up.
Who's not going to like it?
Most people. I believe that Hawthorn should trade Tom Mitchell.
Why would you say that, Adam?
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think Hawthorn can continue to go in with a starting four midfield of Mitchell and Warple. I think they're too similar. I think that Warple proved that when it's just him, he can be an excellent footballer. He won their best and fairest last year.
He did.
I think you'll get more for Mitchell than you would for Warple. And I think where Hawthorn's at, trading Mitchell gives them the opportunity to potentially have three picks inside 20, if you include the first pick that they've already got. And it gives them a chance then to either trade up for what they do need or keep the three picks inside 20. I just think that, look, Mitchell's an excellent player, but Mitchell and Warple together, they're too similar. And a lot of the time, they get the ball in spots that they shouldn't. They stymie the ball movement, the quicker ball movement, because of the way that they play. And I think it gets them stuck. And I think they're better to keep Warple because he's younger. And as I said, the reference point is that when Mitchell didn't play last year, he was able to win the best and fairest. They need more speed in the midfield. They need more run in the midfield. And to have Warple and Mitchell there, I just don't think it's the right blend.
Let's get to Phil Murphy, host of ESPN Sports Centre. He'll know all about that back in the old days, 90210. Good morning, Phil.
I reckon it's a little before my time, but I can fake my way through it.
Have you never seen 90210?
I've seen it, but you talk Jason Presley, 51. I'm 33, so I mean, it was just a little before my time. I was watching cartoons when that was popular.
So you're more a Dawson's Creek man, Phil.
Yeah, I guess you could say I was a little more up my alley. How are you boys going today?
We are well, mate. We are going well. Tell us what's happening in the NBA, because yesterday was a sensational, in many respects, day in US sport. But the NBA started with the Milwaukee Bucks standing down from their playoff game, which got things rolling. And there was a possibility that the season would be called off then and there, or on the back of some meetings last night. What's happened since?
Yeah, I mean, and you put it perfectly. When the Bucks decided not to take the floor against the Magic, it wasn't something that was orchestrated and planned. I mean, in fact, the Magic were on the court warming up. They had expected to play a game, and the Thunder and Rockets had already arrived at their arena to start their early warm-ups before their game. So it was somewhat reactive, and you know, we've been debating internally in the U.S. Is it a boycott? Is it a strike? One of my colleagues, Clinton Yates, put it best. I think he said it was a collective bereavement from a lot of these players, most of whom are black players, as a response to Jacob Blake, an unarmed black man being shot in Kenosha, Wisconsin, which is about 50 kilometers from Milwaukee's home arena. So when the Bucks decided not to take the floor, it became apparent that they were not going to play. In fact, they were on the phone with some of their local government back in the Milwaukee area to see what would be done and what could be done in seeking justice for what happened. And in the last 24 hours or so, games have been postponed both yesterday and today, today being Thursday. It's still Thursday evening here in the U.S. Yesterday, today's games all postponed. The players met last night. They met earlier today. They're still meeting today to try and figure out first if they were going to play, and they will. They said they have decided to return to play. Now the debate is it Friday here locally in the U.S., Saturday for you? Is it 24 hours thereafter? So that's the question that's being asked. It seems as though they will take another day of postponed games and then resume Saturday U.S. time, Sunday morning Australia time, but there does still remain a possibility that tomorrow we'll see NBA basketball back.
So, Phil, obviously yesterday, as Half said, was just an unbelievable day because it wasn't just the NBA, but it was baseball. It was the WNBA. There was all sorts of sports that were postponing games. But if we just focus on the NBA for a moment longer, they've overnight they've all come together. There was teams that said they didn't want to play. They didn't want to resume the season. What's changed now in the past 24 hours that said, okay, no, as a collective now we want to resume the playoffs and play the games. And who were the strongest voices through that period of time?
So, yeah, players from all teams that are in the bubble still, which is 14 different teams, met collectively late last night. And it wasn't so much a vote as so far as will we continue. It was a poll to say, as it stands, who wants to keep playing and who wants to leave and use their platform as professional athletes to initiate change or serve in their communities or do whatever they might do toward that end. Of the 14 teams present, two said they did not want to continue playing at that point. And that was, surprisingly, the Lakers and the Clippers, which if you look at punters' markets, are the two favorites to win a title. So if you would have thought the teams that maybe want to be on their way out would be teams that are functionally out of contention, that's not the case. As of last night in those meetings, it was Lakers and Clippers, which is especially interesting because as the Lakers go, it's initiated by LeBron James, whose legacy and the comparisons to Michael Jordan is very much at stake, and they have a very realistic shot of winning a title. In the conversations overnight, they met again about 6 hours ago, and they've been meeting throughout the day, as have the Board of Governors, different ownership groups of the league. Funny enough, of all people who's been the liaison, it's been Michael Jordan. According to multiple reports, he has credibility with players, obviously is an all-world talent, and he has credibility with the owners because he's an owner of the Bucks. He also happens to be the only black majority owner in the NBA, is the majority owner of the Charlotte Hornets. So he has credibility with both groups. He spoke to Chris Paul, who's the Players Association president. He spoke to Russell Westbrook and a number of different guys and said, okay, what are you seeking here? What would make you comfortable to continue the season, and how can we help you toward that end? And it seems as though that's why the terminology of strike and boycott isn't exactly accurate, because it was never the players against the owners. Yeah. It was the players asking themselves, should we be playing a game today? And then the owners walking alongside them and saying, what can we do to help? So because they seem to be pulling in the same direction, that's why play will resume somewhat quickly. It's again, in the next 24 to 48 hours, I would bank on the latter for NBA basketball to resume. So we haven't gotten specific yet as far as what the players have told the owners they want them to do, what would for them would mark enough change for them to initiate playing. But I think, you know, it's like I said, it's more of a bereavement than a boycott. They're just brokenhearted at yet another man, seemingly, you know, lethal force being taken against him unnecessarily.
Let's get to the first leg of the quaddie, though. It is the McNeil Stakes tomorrow, three-year-old Group 3 affair. $160,000 up for grabs over this 1,200-metre event, Dino. And we've got full field, 16 going around at the moment. And we've got, at the top of the order, Tagaloa, who we know is a very, very serious racehorse. After Group 1 Blue Diamond win as a two-year-old, comes back in for the Busted and Young Yard. Michael Walker in the saddle, $3.80 in the early markets at tab.com.au.
Yeah, I think he's got to be the starting point, Daniel. Blue Diamond winner at this track and distance. He was then very good in a Golden Slipper. He didn't have the best of luck, and he really toughed it out well. He's had a break. He's had two trials. He looks to be going well, and I think he's a classy sort of horse. He's probably on a guineas path, and I would think he's going to be hard to beat. Some very nice horses in this race that we've only seen on limited exposure. They've only been to the races once or twice, so they're probably open to a lot of improvement. I actually think the pick of those might be number 9, Crosshaven. He's a horse that won at Geelong, and then he won at Moonee Valley, and I don't think we saw him anywhere near in his best light at Moonee Valley. It was a slowly run race and a dash home and the tight track. He's a big horse. I don't think that really suited him, but he still found a way to win. I'm very interested in him. He trialled very well down the straight recently. 6 Rathlin, I was a bit keen on him last week. Obviously, the race has got called off. He's since trialled again on Tuesday, and he trialled in the blinkers, and he went really well. He's drawn for a great run. I think he's very competitive. And our Playboy, who did win the Vane Stakes first up and looks to have made good improvement, might be the pick of the Mick Price, Michael Kent Jr. runners, but they've got a strong hand in the race with Immortal Love and also National Choice, who are very nice horses as well. So it's a deep race, but I think 4 main chances I'm leaning to Tagaloa.
All right, so the Blue Diamond winner back. We know a strong start to another campaign, Quinny says. Dino, what say the market?
Yes, and Tagaloa has been the best stakes runner. Michael Walker's only ride on the program at 460 into 380. Immortal Love, one of several Price Kent Jr. runners, is a $7 second elect from the stablemate R Playboy at 8. Fly the Ward, 850. Then we've got Ranting has been spec 13 into 950. And there's been a bit of money for the runner that Dino mentioned in Crosshaven, as much as $23 into 14.
All right. Okay. So that's a good start. The McNeil Stakes is a nice way to start the Friday form today in the first leg of the quaddie tomorrow at Caulfield. Rammer, you have one job in the Friday form section of the program, to take the numbers for all the punters out there who perhaps haven't got a pen and pencil at the time and need to reset at the end of each race. What are the numbers for the first leg, please?
1, 9, 6, and 3.
1, 9, 6, 3. First leg of the quaddie tomorrow. The second leg is race 8 over the 1,700 metres, a listed affair, the Heatherley Stakes. And again, we've got another good-sized field, full field tomorrow as well. A lot of big racing and a lot of big fields tomorrow as we get into the serious part of the campaigns in the season for the racing. And Ciccone is favourite for the Heatherley Dino. It's been a very good horse. I think Nick Ryan was the Rising Star Trainer of the Year, wasn't he, at the awards the other night?
He was. He won the Colin Alderson Award for the Young Trainer Under 40 and had a great season. Real breakout season with his horses, and Ciccone obviously led the charge, winning the Winter Championship. And he's a very good chance in this race because he's got race fitness on his side, Ciccone, as does number 11, Planciel. And probably to the punters, he was disappointing last start that backed him, but it was a faster clear run race and just a dash home. And I don't think that really suited him. He's just such a good Caulfield horse, and I think this will be a bit more truly run. And for that reason, I'm going to go with Planciel to beat one at good odds here in Dr. Drill, who resumes for the Ma Eustace stable. He seems to have trialled up pretty well, and he's just got a little bit of an awkward draw to contend with, but he's a good talent for this sort of grade, and I think he'll run well. Ciccone's certainly there with a very good chance. He ran so well in the Lawrence Stakes 2 weeks ago, and he goes back to a handicap here, and he'll make his own luck up on the pace. And the other one I'd be considering, she's a long way out of the handicap, is number 16, Shandy. I just think this has been a mare that's always had talent but hasn't either been mature or not quite ready to show her absolute best. This time in, she's come in flying form, and that was an effortless win last start. And whilst this is a lot harder, I can see Jamie Carr putting her right up on the speed, making her own luck and running a really good race. There's a lot of horses in this race that are probably 2 or 3 runs off their peak and, you know, maybe 600 to 800 metres off their best distance. So I think we can narrow it down a bit to those 4 main chances.
All right, so you can narrow the fields a little bit, Quinny. Is that what the punters have done?
Well, Ciccone's been the best back, so the money has been for the favourite initially, $4.80 into $3.60, but then it's quite wide open. Gamekeeper, a $4 second elect out from $3.70. Planciel at $8.50. The drift continues for Dr. Drill, so if you want to take the tip there from Dino, 14 out to 17. And if you do want to follow the money, if you're going a little bit wider for your exotics, there has been money for number 17 in good health, a $34 chance. But Ciccone, the best backed runner in the second leg of the quaddie.
No questions from you, Quinny, for Dino on this one. No questions?
No, I'll let him off the hook here.
Ooh, that's a relief.
Whoa, what a relief. What a relief that'd be for the great man. All right, Ramat, what are the numbers, please, in the second leg of the Caulfield Quaddie tomorrow?
11, 4, 8, and 16.
11, 4, 8, 16 are the numbers for Dino tomorrow in the second leg. All right, let's get through the Group 1 feature on the card tomorrow. The Mamsie Stakes, $750,000 weight for age Group 1 affair over the 1,400 metres, and an absolutely crack field of 15 going around. Lots of Group 1 winners, Dino. A couple second up, a couple first up, so I'm not really sure if they'll be fully wound up for this, which makes it interesting again, I think. But Behemoth is favourite at tab at the moment. $4. Jumping out of barrier 2. C. Williams in the saddle. It's always a pretty good result when C. Williams and Barrier 2 is involved, as far as I'm concerned. Are you taking the $4?
He's in my numbers, Daniel. He's a very good horse. He won well first up. I just wonder, he's such a big horse, whether Barrier 2, and this will be run at a good tempo. You couldn't imagine a more different scenario than 2 weeks ago in the Lawrence Stakes, where they looked no speed and they virtually cantered along and sprinted home. Here in the Group 1 contest, you've got Be Good Dear Mother, Streets of Avalon's drawn the outside barrier, Glenn Fiddick with a lightweight, Savatiano and Iconoclasm, all good tactical speed horses. This will be run at a really good speed. The one I like is Cascadian. He was back from a wide draw and ran well in the Lawrence Stakes, had no chance given that scenario, but he was good to the line. And I think from this draw, he won't be as far back. He'll be midfield or a little bit worse, but he won't be last. And I think he's got a great winning chance. Arcadia Queen If she'd drawn a decent barrier, I just think she'd win this race. She just needs that bit of luck early from the draw. She was just too fresh and too keen first up, but she was tremendous the way she, I thought she toughed it out and will be a lot fitter for that run. Behemoth's there with a chance, but the first 200 metres will be the key. If he gets sort of three or four back the fence, he's going to need a lot of luck getting through traffic, but he's good enough to win the race on talent. And I'm going to throw in a roughie in Mr. Quickie. I think the way he's been trialling, he could run really well fresh. And he did run third in the Maccabi Diva first up this time last year. And I think he's ready to run a bold race first up. But, yeah, I think Cascadian will give you a great run for your money at each-way odds.
All right. So well, what are those each-way odds at the moment for Cascadian, Quinny?
Currently $11. So no doubt that will be popular in the next couple of minutes. And maybe even the other roughie that Dino gave a push for, Mr. Quickie, who's a $26 chance. In the last week, the money has been for Behemoth, $5 into $4. Savatiano, a $5 second elect. Arcadia Queen, $7. And then Mystic Journey. She was as short as $4 in pre-post betting before the PB Lawrence. She got back out to 11, has been 11 back into 9.50. Dino, you were obviously underwhelmed with that PB Lawrence run. Where is Mystic Journey at?
Oh, she's got a lot better chance tomorrow. I wasn't underwhelmed. She sort of ran about where I thought, given the way the race was run. But she's now just got to go and do it second up. And she stays at 1,400, where last preparation she went to 1,600 second up. And she ran very well, obviously, in the Maccabi Diva. So, I'd be just thinking a top four or five run. I'm just trying to narrow down the winning chances. If she won, I wouldn't be shocked. But I just want to see where she's at tomorrow.
And where from there? Where do you see her going to this campaign? Is she going to find it hard to win at Group 1 level, or do you think she's picking over nicely for a certain target?
Oh, no, she's as good as them, but she's not better than them. So that's when you need everything to fall into place, and she'll run well in a Maccabi Diva or an Underwood or those sort of races. You know, maybe ultimately the Empire Rose for the mares would be the best race for her, but be interesting to see how her preparation unfolds. And the same with Arcadia Queen. I'm expecting a good run from her tomorrow, but she's now got to do it second up.
And with Arcadia Queen and Regal Power, is there something down the track that you want to keep an eye on for them in terms of the future markets, or do you just want to see them race by race as well?
Yeah, pretty much. But I think if Arcadia Queen gets to her right form, she's, you know, out of this race, she's the one I'd want to back in a Cox Plate out of these horses.
And it's a crack field for the Group 1 Memsie, without a doubt. And it's going to be good fun to watch to see who can get over the line first. And Dino reckons there's a bit of value on offer. Rammer, what are those numbers again?
9, 12, 7 and 6.
Dino, race 10 tomorrow at Caulfield is that race. And three legs in, we need to win the last leg, of course, the Cockram Stakes. Nice way to finish it off. A Group 3 affair over the 1,200 metres. And again, full-size fields going around tomorrow. So a great day of racing. Good chance for value if you can find it, like Dino's clearly done already with us on the Friday form. Not so much value at the top of the order here, though, for the favourite at tab.com.au. Rubisaki, who we know has just been in unbelievable form through its career with Paddy Payne. $2.60. With the top weight there in the last leg, Dino, at tab.com.au. Taking to Rubisaki?
I think she's one of the four main chances, Daniel, but I think there's a really good value play here in number 8, Missile Mantra, who's a winner of a reduced choice stakes at this track and distance. She ran really well on this day last year behind Super Seth and the McNeil. She's trialled up really well in recent weeks. I think it's a bit of a target race for her, and I think all the speed's drawn to the inside here, and Damien Lane might be able to just get a really cheap drag through along from barrier two, and just if he can get out at the right time, I think she's got a tremendous chance of winning. Rubisaki's obviously a star. She's won 8 of 10 with 2 seconds, so you know she's going to run well, and she's a must. I've got her in for second. I think good chances, though, to Madame Rouge. I thought her recent trial in Sydney was just outstanding. She's going well. Group 1 place getter recently as well. And Bless Her, who comes through the winter form lines, but was tremendous winning here last start. And just from the draw, she's probably going to land in the first three and give a good sight. But I think the class horses might get her late. But I think Missile Mantra is a really good chance at a very backable price.
All right, let's find out what that backable price is. Quinny, what is Missile Mantra? Sounds pretty good to me.
Can we get a drum roll?
Oh, no, not one of these moments, is it? We do have a drum roll. I didn't know we had one of those, Quinny. Well played. What is it?
Well, whoever got that drum roll, very, very impressed on the back of no notice. Missile Mantra,
19 the win, 5 the place.
Oh,
10,
boy.
Number 8. Dino, as punters across the nation furiously reach for the Tab app, what price should this old mantra be?
I would have thought single figures anyway. Probably half what it is.
Righto. Okay. We've got something on here. This is actually the most fun part of the Friday Form these days. Seeing what happens to the market in the next 25 minutes or so before we get to Quinny for the next update. That's the most fun I have during the week on the Breakfast Club. Sorry to all the contributors and guests we have. This is the most fun I have, watching the markets just absolutely tumble in, Quinny. So we've got $19 and $5 for Missile Mantra, Dino's top selection. What about the other runners in the market?
Well, the other runners that are now running for the minor money, hopefully, Rubisaki, who's a 260 favourite. Bless her, a 650 second elect. Pretty Brazen, 10. Perfect Jewel, 10. The best back runner has been Rubisaki, who's been $3.80 into 260 to head the market at that quote. And I just want to hear from Rammer, because we haven't discussed Polly Gray when he had the 5x multiplier last week. Polly Gray was backed as if unbeatable, and then the program got abandoned. A, did he back up with Polly Gray again this week? And B, did he get the 5x or just then on Miss Old Mantra?
Well, when the races were cancelled, unfortunately, last Saturday, I decided to reinvest in another state. Now, I thought the Tab would be kind to me and give me the multiplier again, which they did. I hit the multiplier button and 1.02 came up.
Why would you do that to him, Quinny? What sort of bloke are you?
Well, Trent, he's very happy that he had the 5x to an extra brute one, and he wasn't going to give him the satisfaction again. But Trent's recorded that you had the 5x the last Saturday, so don't expect it any time soon, he said.
No, that is unfair.
Take it up with Trent.
That is unfair, grossly unfair. 1.02, that's disappointing. It's disappointing, but that's the reality. So that's the market for the last league. Any other major moves, Quinny, in that league?
No, I'm just checking. Missile Mantra is still a $19 chance. And Dino, obviously, we'll get your full selections on RSN tomorrow morning. But Polly Gray was one of those runners that you steered the listeners into last week, and the money just came in bucket loads. Goes around again tomorrow. Should we be sticking fat in race number 5?
I think she's a very good chance. I'm probably actually not as confident as I was last week, even though it probably looks a very similar field. Just a different race structure. But, yeah, she's a very good chance.
There you go, a little bit of juice for the Polly Gray fans out there, Rammer. Good luck with that and your multiplier tomorrow.
Awesome.
Let's get to the formula bet, Dino. We've got, before we do that, the numbers, please, in the last league. Thanks, Rammer.
8, 1, 3, and 12.
Oh, it's happened again. You won't believe this. My mate's just rung up. He's texted me. Said, mate, I only just woke up. Sorry, I was supposed to wake up early today just for the Friday form. I've missed the first three legs. Can you get Rammer to go through the numbers again? Rammer, can you do that for my man?
Yes. Race 7, 1, 9, 6, and 3. Race 8, 11, 4, 8, and 16. Race 9, 9, 12, 7, and 6. Race 10, 8, 1, 3, and 12.
All right. They are the numbers for Dino's Quaddy tomorrow at Caulfield for Memsey Stakes Day. Of course, as Quinny said, more conversation about that and refinement on the panel tomorrow morning on RSN 927. What about the formula bet, Dino, this week? Who are we playing for and where are we going?
We are playing for Tony Monaghan of Queenscliff. And for Tony, a $40 win bet. Race 3, number 14, A Fair to Remember. Race 4, number and $40 win on race 4, number 7, I Am Superman. And $40 on the all-up of the pair. Race 3, number 14, into race 4, number 7. That's for Tony Monaghan of Queenscliff.
Good luck to you, Tony. 3, 14, into 4, 7 tomorrow at Caulfield. Nice little early running double to fill you up with cash. Quinny, what does that come to?
The good news, that multi comes to $20, $4 A Fair to Remember, into $5 I Am Superman. The bad news for Dino is I've tipped both those runners on top in the Herald Sun, so I'm feeling up about. I can sense he's deflated, and the money is continuing for his roughie in the last. There's been 4,000 already in the last 4.5 minutes. So good to see the RSN family rallying behind Miss Old Mantra, who's $19 in the last race. Just that's 4,000 in total. Someone hasn't plonked 4,000 on.
Righto, okay. Still $19. That's the first time it's sort of stood up like this for a long, long time. Something's wrong.
We need a sponsor for the Ramaruffi. We need a sponsor. It's the most popular thing that happens all week.
Who would get the money? What's that? Dino or Rama?
Well, I don't know.
Well,
we'll split
that's
it.
A very good question.
It's Rama's IP. Dino definitely gets it.
It's Rama's IP.
Dino's taking it. If you want to... If you want to sponsor the Ramaruffi.
Stage.
Did we?
Yes, that's how it started.
Yeah, that's right. We did too.
I might speak to my friends that were involved there and see if we can rekindle the friendship.
That's right. We had some great success with our former investors.
Mm.
Yes, correct.
Oh, that's right. We did too.
Catchy name too. It was very catchy. It rolled off the tongue.
It did roll off the tongue. Nice work, Quinny. Nice work indeed. So that's the formula bet. So now I imagine, I don't know, put words in your mouth, but that runner in the last race might be your Ramaruffi, is it?
It is, Daniel, yes. Race 10, number 8, Missile Mantra. We had a few to choose from, but it's the one I like the best. Race 10, number 8.
Race 10, number 8 is our Ramaruffi for tomorrow's racing at Caulfield. And so it should be with that. So it should be. Dino, fantastic to have you part of the program again today. Look forward to hearing you tomorrow in the build-up, of course, to Memsie Stakes Day, and then pre-race and post-race as well with your analysis of all that's going on there at Caulfield. Have a great day tomorrow. Look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you, Daniel, and good luck with... this is not really great for radio, but good luck with your orchestral manoeuvres in the background there. I see you've got an orchestral stand there.
I do.
what are you learning exactly?
I've got the trombone underneath me here, Dino. It's my daughter's trombone. This is the trombone room when I'm finished at 8:30.
I played trombone for 6 years, Daniel. I can give her a few hints.
What was your favourite? What was your go-to tune?
I was in the orchestra and then in the band, and some of the songs were a bit good for me. So I remember we played at Dallas Brooks Hall one night, and there might have been a bit of Milli Vanilli action there. I may not have actually played. May Matt just move the slide of the trombone a bit and
brilliant.
Look good.
Brilliant. That is fantastic. Well, she's big on the Star Wars theme, you know, the Stormtrooper.
Very good. Yes. That's the go-to. Absolutely.
She likes that. She likes that. She's working on that. But hopefully at some stage we progress into real music. We'll see how we go.
Real music. Real music.
It's Stormtrooper.
The John
music.
Williams stuff. Is it John Williams? Is that his name? The one that did all the music?
Yeah.
If she's doing that, that's what we want to hear. That's great music.
I can do Stormtroopers. That's easy. And I've got no idea what I'm doing.
What about she should be doing AFL theme songs? They're done by brass bands, aren't they?
And we need some more banjos.
Them or a trumpet.
If I can learn the banjo, we'll do the AFL. Do the AFL theme songs. A lot of banjo activity there. Good on you, Dino. We'll catch you tomorrow on RSN 927.
Thanks, Daniel.
Dan Lester, the world's greatest form analyst, with us on the Friday form. Quinny, you've suggested that you've got two similar winners to Dino in races 3 and 4, but what's your bet tomorrow for us?
Well, once again, he's riding my coattails. I won't give those two out, but I do anticipate that First Hand will start the day with a bang for punters. Race 1, number 5, a lovely way to turn 20 into 52 and play with the bank's money for the duration of the day.
Jordan Roughhead. And well, he's a part of the preview with his team Collingwood, who are taking on the Blues this weekend in the AFL. I'm looking forward to talking about that with Jordan, who joins us on the line. Good morning, Jordan.
Morning, gents. How's things?
We are terrific, mate. How's your world at the moment?
It's interesting. I'm currently living in a hub up on the Sunshine Coast, Collingwood Footy Club up here with the Melbourne Demons, and we've just had Essendon move in yesterday. So certainly not the way anyone anticipated football season looking, but fortunately we got ourselves back on the winning list, and that improves the mood of the hub dramatically. So just got to stay there now.
No doubt about that. Yeah, winners always grin around the place. What about living with other teams effectively? How much do you come across the other families and players from the other teams?
Yeah, fair bit. We've got sort of full use of the resort, so on a walk across to the beach, generally walk past players and partners from other clubs, and it is quite interesting. Some of them happy to say g'day and have a brief chat. Others almost looks like they want to get inside their phone. They're looking at it that intently, but it's been good.
across the league, I think, this year, players have probably got a little bit closer just because we all understand what each other are going through and trying to support each other where we can.
Hey, Jordan, just looking, obviously we want to look ahead to your next game, but looking back quickly to your North Melbourne game, was it just simply a game that you had to win and it was really irrelevant how you played almost, just to get some sort of confidence back, some sort of momentum going into these last few rounds of the season?
Yeah, yes and no. It was obviously a game we had to win, but it wasn't so much of a case of it didn't matter how we played. We went in with a pretty strong plan and a way we wanted the game to look. And even though we weren't able to sort of establish ourselves with a good lead prior to half time, we were playing the game the way we wanted to and we felt like we were in control. And had we been able to put a bit more of a score on in that first half, we would have probably snuck away with a more comfortable win. So it did feel like we built across the four quarters and a good way to, I guess, start a little run of momentum, hopefully, that we can continue this week.
So then, has it simply been a personnel issue with the way you guys have been playing? We've all got high opinions of you here. We think Collingwood are one of the very best sides when they've got everything's up and going for them. So has it simply been a personnel issue over the previous few weeks then?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a combination of a lot of things. The fix, the cram, was difficult for us to get through, but we managed to get through 2-2. We're just looking for the best way to play and get access to our forward line and give those guys a chance to score, because we're pretty happy with a lot of the stuff we're doing down back and through the midfield, and we've just got to put the cherry on top and put a score on the scoreboard.
I want to actually ask you about that, because it did look like in that sort of particularly the third quarter and the early part of the last quarter that the scoring started to return a little bit. I don't think there's any doubt that You've got one of the better defences in the competition. The stats say that, but the scoring has become a bit of an issue this year. How much confidence did you get out of the fact that you're able to kick those sort of six goals in about 30 minutes of football?
Yeah, a lot. And I think one of the great aspects of it was that we had 9 individual goal kickers on the night, which is something that we haven't done for the majority of the year. So it's great to see a lot of guys getting a look at goal and being able to convert. So hopefully that will continue against the Blues on Sunday.
You've seen Darcy Moore up close. Obviously, you play in the same area of the ground as him most of the time. Just his development of a footballer, because I kind of feel like he's gone under the radar a little bit this year. He's often been the headline act for so many reasons, whether it be whether he was going to re-sign or the injury issues he's had. That's not a problem, and that's not a talking point at the moment, but he just seems to be doing his job extremely well for the Magpies this year.
He's an exceptional talent, Darcy, and I was actually laughing with him yesterday. Sometimes when I'm in behind him, he looks like he's 15 or 20 metres out of position, but he's actually almost teasing the opposition. He wants them to kick it to his opponent and back his athleticism and his speed to get there and shut it down. And what I love about him is that often it's not even just to get there and put a fist in, but he gets there and intercepts the footy and gets us going back the other way. And he's a crucial player to our side, and his form has been pretty remarkable this year. His body's held up and playing some awesome footy, and I've certainly got him penciled into the All-Australian 40 at the moment.
Let's get the Boomer Harvey, the AFL Games record holder, ready for the Friday footy preview. Boomer, good morning to you.
Yes, good morning, boys. Another big week in football, isn't it?
Well, it's a big week in your house. I saw yesterday, Boomer, there was a horse in your kitchen.
My house. Well, it's a horse if it's standing next to me, because I'm small, but it's actually a miniature pony, to be quite honest. And this is a true story, Daniel. I'm not sure if I mentioned it last couple of weeks, but 2 or 3 weeks ago, I went outside to mow my lawns, and there was a pony standing in my yard. I've got a little bit of acreage, so there's a little bit of grass there. And so I mow my lawns and I shut my front gate because I didn't want the pony to escape. My wife goes up to the vet and tells the vet that we've got a pony. So they find out who it is. They come up there and they realise the kids like the pony. And they said, you can just keep it until we need it to, you know, eat our grass. So the pony's been here for 2 weeks. I left the back door ajar last night when I put the bins out. And I come back inside and there was a pony in my kitchen. And grabbed an orange off the bench and ate it, but just squeezed it everywhere. So I had orange over my bench, over my new floorboards. Yeah, it was unbelievable. It was like Mr. Ed. It was like watching an episode of Mr. Ed there for about 3 minutes at my house last night. It was great.
Brilliant. That is funny stuff. Very funny stuff. Imagine having a pony in the kitchen just eating oranges and squeezing juice all over the floor. That's not great. That's not fantastic.
A little bit different. A little bit different, but yeah, that's different.
You you country folk up there in all that land, you crazy people you are.
Yeah, us country folk out in the city, us country folk.
Lots happening in the world of footy, Boomer, so we need to get our teeth into it because round 14 is a very, very interesting round of footy. And let's get straight into Friday night, I reckon, because it's a cracker. We had two good games, entertaining games last night, different sort of games, but entertaining games. And I reckon we'll get another one tonight, Boomer, with the Cats taking on the Bulldogs. It's at Metricon Stadium for those playing at home, and it starts at 7:50. Check your local guides. For the Bulldogs, Tory Dixon and Will Hayes comes back in. Benny Hayes will be buying slabs willy-nilly with this sort of stuff going on. Dixon and Hayes comes in for Ben Cavara and Paddy Lipinski. Both have been omitted. And for the Cats, Harry Taylor's back. Zach Tui's back as well. So two big ins for the Cats. Sava Radigalia is out again. And Jordan Clark also omitted for the Cats. Now, we've got, what have we got, fourth playing eighth or something at the moment, whatever it might be, coming into this round. The Cats are red hot at the moment, Boomer, and the Dogs' best, as we've discussed a few times, is good enough when they win the ball around the contest. Can they do that tonight against the Cats?
Well, I think this is going to be a ripper half for a number of reasons. Just for the ladder position, I know we've only got a handful of games to go, but Geelong win this, they sit on top of the AFL ladder tonight before Port and Brisbane both play. Yep. They've won their last four in a row now, so they're on fire. On the other hand, the Western Bulldogs will get a little break on a few teams just sitting outside the eight. So a massive game of importance just through ladder position. Just a couple of little stats, boys. Bulldogs actually haven't beat a top eight team this year. I really like what they're doing of late. They've got back to their style of football, which I like, and they've got some personnel back as well. Great to see Norton up forward. You know, he's capable of kicking a bag. And I'm absolutely loving what's who's kicking? Wallace. Wallace is just kicking goals. Yeah. And I love seeing it because a couple of years ago, you go back and he was in and out of that team and couldn't get a spot in that midfield. Well, he's made himself as one of the better little small forwards in the competition and still finding the football. So I'm loving what they're doing. I think they need to find another avenue to goal. I don't think they can rely on Wallace, and Norton will kick the goals for him. But Geelong's style of football now, guys, is completely different to everybody else in the competition. They're the highest scoring team in the competition. And I'm loving, they maintain possession. We know what they do in their back half and through the wings. But as soon as they get the one-on-one opportunity to go forward to Hawkins, they've made him the best forward in the competition by an absolute mile now. I mentioned Charlie Dixon a couple of weeks ago. Well, Hawkins has gone past him in leaps and bounds. So I'm loving what the Cats' style is. Again, maintaining possession. They're the highest scoring team in the competition, which is absolutely fantastic. And Hawkins is on fire. I mentioned their points four. Well, they're the second lowest scoring. Sorry, they hold the teams to the most scores against as well. So they're second on the ladder there. I like what Geelong are doing. I like what the Bulldogs are doing. I think this is match of the round for me. There's no doubt in my mind that this can be an absolute ripper game if Bulldogs bring their A game. If they bring that style of football where they play in the phone booth and they can bring the pressure, I think this is going to be a really good game.
Well, I think they're going to have to bring the pressure wider because Geelong are a kick mark sort of team. If they need to keep Geelong in motion tonight, the Dogs, if there's any chance to win this game, I reckon if they allow Geelong to control the tempo through their kick marks, I think it's all over.
Yeah, and we spoke to Grian Myers yesterday on the program, and what he did actually confirm to us was that there was a distinct change of football from them after the Collingwood game. They didn't like the way they played in that Collingwood game, that they were too slow, and they made a conscious decision to speed it up after that. So I thought that was an interesting insight from Grian yesterday. I think, to sort of Boomer's point a little bit, the Bulldogs have actually beaten Geelong two of the last three times they've played. So the Dogs know how they can beat Geelong. It's just a question of whether they're good enough and consistent enough to be able to beat Geelong, because that's the problem with the Dogs this year. They've been incredibly inconsistent. So I'm going with Geelong based more on the fact I trust what Geelong's doing over the course of the season as opposed to the Dogs. But there's no doubt in my mind that the Dogs could cause an upset if they behave themselves tonight.
Whitey, it's the we talk about that consistency. We know McRae, Hunter, Smith, Bontempelli, that's the engine room now for the Western Bulldogs. You pretty much know what you're going to get from them every single week. But it's the how for them. For me, it's the how. It's if they get their possessions through the middle of the ground in the back half and they throw it around, they're all going to have 25. We know that. But if they get him in the dangerous part of the ground and kick the ball inside 50 and give Norton and Wallace and these type of guys an opportunity, that's the consistency part for me. So it's not the consistency of getting the ball. We know the numbers will be there. It's where and how they get that football.
Unfortunately, boys, this is going to be a real tempo game tonight, because I think Geelong won't want to let the Bulldogs get too much ball on the outside. That will really concern Geelong with their speed. What they were able to do to Melbourne in stages of the game last week, the Bulldogs, when they got outside that contest, they looked outstanding with their ball movement. So I don't think Geelong will allow that, albeit, Boomer, that Geelong have started to move the ball quickly and sells and get it into Hawkins a lot quicker. Whitey mentioned that the Bulldogs have beaten Geelong the last couple of times. That's how they've done it, through quick ball movement. Geelong don't like teams that move the ball quickly against them, because they've always felt like Geelong are the best tempo team in the competition. Their tempo over the last couple of weeks has been quick, and that's really helped them. But I just don't think tonight's game is going to be a real quick, free-flowing game, unfortunately.
Yeah, I have concerns for the forward line of the Dogs, the way that the Cats defend as well, up the ground as well as in the back six situation. If Bruce is going to step up for the Cats, the Dogs tonight, otherwise it's just about curtains for them. I'll be tipping the Cats. Whitey's tipping the Cats. Rami, you're on the Cats?
Yep.
I'm on the Cats.
Boomer?
Yeah, I agree with you, Huff. I think they've got to find that other avenue to goal. If they can have three goal kickers that kick multiple, and Bruce needs to be that third, no doubt, I think the Bulldogs can actually win with their ball movement if they get it right. So I'm going to go with the Bulldogs. I'm going to give them an opportunity, and I'm going to go with the Bulldogs this week.
All right. That's what's happening in that game. Let's have a look at some Saturday action. Let's start with the night game, Melbourne and St Kilda. It's a very interesting affair. The D's, we know, we're sort of believers in Whitey, although last week didn't help their cause. And the Saints have been going absolutely gangbusters. No teams as yet as to what's going on in terms of selection. But the Saints have been a really good conveyance. Three of the last four, the Demons have won. They lost last week, of course, to the Bulldogs. They got comprehensively pants in that third term particularly. And the Saints have had some really good opposition in the last couple of weeks. They were found wanting against the Cats. They did a number on the Bombers and then just went down to the Lions. Rammer, have you got an indication about where this might be won in this game between the Cats, the Demons and the Saints?
Who's the big out, Whitey, for the Saints? Your man Steve-O is on Twitter last night was talking about a big out for the Saints this week.
I think it's Max King.
He's a big in terms of big and little. He's big.
So then that will mean Battle will come and play as a permanent forward, I imagine, or they'll have Ryder playing as a permanent forward this week. I think that the Saints are still going well, albeit they lost last week against the Lions. I thought they played a really good brand of football still. So you look at watching the Demons last week, they played one good quarter of football against the Dogs in that second quarter. Then after that, you know, the Dogs were able to really do as they pleased against them. Once that, again, the problem with the Demons, and we've all said this for years, once the ball got outside the contest, the Demons just, they don't look organised enough when the ball's in movement from the opposition. It just seemed to be able to flow from one end of the ground to the other. That's the Saints' one wood at the moment, with their ball movement, their flow and their speed. So I think I'm picking the Saints in this one, Huff.
I'm keen for Whitey's take on this, because he's a believer. We're believers in the D's and have been. It's running out of time here, Whitey.
Yeah, I know that. I slightly disagree with Rama. I reckon Melbourne had one bad quarter as opposed to one good quarter. And I think if you take out the third quarter, I reckon Melbourne was okay. I don't think they've been better, and they did fail the test against a better team, having had good wins against an understrength Collingwood and the easy kill games. But I'm going to tip them here, not with a great deal of confidence, but I think St Kilda were a bit disappointing last week against Brisbane. They were okay, but if Brisbane had kicked straight, I reckon the margin would have been a bit more. And look, this is the most difficult round to tip in for the entire season. I just want to make that clear, but I'm leaning just towards Melbourne.
Well, Boomer,
the money's on. The money's on.
Yeah, that's why. So you're hoping.
Max Gawn
you don't
helps.
Truly
Max
believe
Gawn
that.
Max helps back.
You don't truly believe that.
Hey? No, I'm not as sold on St Kilda as a lot of other people are, and I'm probably going to be made to look silly. They've definitely improved, but I'm still not quite sure about St Kilda, whereas I'm a bit more of a believer in Melbourne, particularly their top end.
Boomer, clean this up for us, can you? What's going to happen?
You two boys finished? You two boys finished? Daniel and I can actually talk some sense here. You can argue how many good quarters they had. We'll jump in the middle. Maybe they had two instead of one or three. But I agree with you, Wyatt. I think Gawn is a massive inclusion. Of course, he's an All-Australian ruckman and a very, very good player. I just like what the Saints are doing with their ball movement. I do agree with Rama with their ball movement there. And they're the third highest scoring team in the competition. And being an offensive player and an offensive mindset, I'm loving teams being able to move the ball. And that's why I've enjoyed watching Geelong again, because they are moving the ball quicker through that middle part of the ground. I think St Kilda's outside speed will really worry the Demons. And I think the Saints will win this one.
All right, so Saints for you, Saints for Rama. Demons for you, Whitey. I'm on the Saints as well. I think the Saints win this one. I think they'll be too good. Let's have a look at Sunday. Let's have a look at Carlton-Collingwood on Sunday. It's always a good clash, Rama. And we just spoke to Jordan Ruffhead about it before. It's at the Gabba on Sunday afternoon, 3:35. Check your local guides. The Blues have been much better in the last little while, certainly for the year, than what they've been previous years. And we're still not sure what the Magpies are. And that performance against the D's 2 weeks ago is sort of hovering over them at the moment, the Magpies. They did a bit of a number on the Kangas last week, but the Blues are a much better team than the Kangas. Rama, the Blues a chance to beat the Pies here and really put a dent in their finals chances?
Yep, definitely. Oh, I think the Blues are going well now. They look structured, they look organised, they look like they've got a real identity now as a team. Collingwood are searching for that form. I think, you know, we heard Jordan Ruffhead a little bit earlier talk about, we got the win, but we started to find a little bit of the structure and the way we wanted to play again. So, you know, I'm a believer in the Pies. I think they're at their best. They're one of the very better teams in the competition. I think Carlton are going to give them a real run for their money. On Sunday is the game, I think. You said they're half. I like Carlton's back line. I like what Wiedering's doing. I know he's playing a little bit injured at the moment, but he's still good enough to be playing week in, week out. Their midfield looks organised. They still need another midfielder, no doubt, the Blues. But they look better when they're going forward. So I'm sorry, Joey, but I think I'm going to tip the Blues this week.
Boomer, the Magpies have beaten... In the last four games, they've won three and lost one. That one against the Demons, they lost. But the other games they won were against the Kangaroos, your boys, the Crows and the Swans. It's not exactly premiership form, is it?
No, they haven't played the best teams in the competition. And let's be truthful, last week's game wasn't the greatest game to watch of AFL football between the Kangas and the Pies. And no. I just think if they bring that performance against a better team in the Blues, that they might get really worried. And I'm liking what the Blues are doing at the minute. I think they're starting to find that forward structure that's just getting there now. I know Eddie and the small still haven't kicked a lot of goals, but their leadership down there with those tools and Harry McKay, he's going to be a very good player. They just need Casbolt to kick straight, and I think they can do some damage. So again, just looking at ladder position, Carlton wins this. They go half a game behind the Pies and hold on to a top eight opportunity. The Pies lose this one, and they're just going to slip out just slightly, and teams are going to overtake them. So massive game for ladder position. But I'm with Rama again. I'm going to go with the Blues. I think they can really worry them.
I'm on the Blues here, Whitey.
Yeah, I am as well. Carlton's playing better than Collingwood. So despite the fact the Magpies have won three of the last four, as you said, Half, it's who they've beaten. Whereas the Blues have actually been quite consistent. Even in games they haven't won, they've been right in them. And I think Carlton's tall forward line can worry Collingwood. And I just reckon the Blues, their defence is very settled. They're getting a lot of contributors. Collingwood aren't getting a lot of contributors. To me, it's a lot of boxes are ticked for Carlton in this one.
All right, we're all going for the Blues in that one. Let's go through the other games with the tips before we get to the Friday face-off. So we're all tipping. We've done the Friday night. Port Adelaide, Sydney. Anyone tipping the Swans?
No.
Nope.
Not for me. No, all on the Port. Fremantle and the Giants. There's a cracker at Optus Stadium. I'm on the Dockers. Rama?
Oh, what a Whitey to go first. I'm on the Giants.
You're on the Giants. Whitey, who you got?
No, I'm on Fremantle. I think they can, again, they can stop the Giants from being able to score. So I really like the Freo Dockers in this one.
Boomer?
Yeah, another really good game this weekend. I'm going to go with the Giants.
Giants for you. 2-2 split on that one. The other game is Gold Coast and North Melbourne. I know who you're going for, Boomer. Whitey, who are you tipping?
Yes.
I'm actually going to go for North Melbourne in this one.
Righto. Rama?
And don't ask me why, because I've got no idea.
No, the Suns.
What are you tipping them back of that of, Whitey? They haven't been great in the last couple of weeks, unfortunately.
But the Suns haven't won for a long time, and I just think they're getting a bit tired. And North Melbourne, they showed some good signs in the first half of at least being competitive. So, I don't know. I really don't know that one.
The chance of an easy kill might get them up and about, the Gold Coast Suns, fellas. They'll win that one, as far as I'm concerned.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.